Hello, everybody. It's Mike Winokur, and we're doing actually week three now of the Golden Bold podcast. I'm back with my friend Frankie. Frankie, say what's up.
What's up, everybody?
So Frankie was with us last week. Today, though, we have no Nate, no El Presidente. He's bigger and better things to do, I guess, apparently. So we're kind of just going to get right into it. We're going to talk about the Yates Cup. The Yates Cup was a big topic of conversation last Wednesday when we spoke. And kind of just setting the backstage for the game. The undefeated Laurier Golden Hawks were hosting the Queens Gaels this past weekend at University Stadium. And let's just say it didn't exactly go where we thought it was going to go. Frankie, you want to talk a little bit about it?
No. So we had pretty big predictions going into the game where we were saying, oh, yeah, Laurier's going to make quick work. They did it already. 9-0, you're going in the heavy favorite. And it all went to the fan, really. Honestly, again, I was at the game. I don't think it was that game was indicative of how Laurier played as a team that season. I don't think so at all. I think there's a lot of groundwork and a lot of improvement that the team can make going into next year, and we can make a push. I think we can make a push for the Vanier next year. I'm gonna be so honest.
Hopefully, I don't know. You talk about Vanier. We're in November. The season just ended. Kind of just talking a little bit about the game. It was really disappointing, Frankie. You said you were at the game. I was as well. Where were you sitting, by the way?
I was right in front of the Queen's bench.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. So you had a good little spot that you're in the middle. Got to see it all.
Yeah.
It was just a tough game to watch. Like, you see them, they turned the ball over five times in the first half. And, like, what a crapshoot, right? Like, Cal Weather goes into the game with four interceptions all season, I think. He throws five in the first half.
Yeah, not exactly your best game.
No,
as a quarterback, not exactly one for your personal highlight reel. But I mean, yeah, you have a passer rating 40 points lower than your next lowest passer rating of 55 in that game. Not exactly what you call productive. But again, I don't think it is. I don't think you look at that game and you like say, oh yeah, that's Cal Withers quarterback. You don't look at that at all. He's still a very effective quarterback. He does his job. I think what I noticed is he's not great outside the pocket. That's what I noticed.
Not great outside the pocket?
That's what I noticed. I think Queen's pass rush that game was impeccable. It was a great display of defense on that. In that specific area, and because they were able to force Cal out of the pocket, he had to make a lot of throws on the run, and you're just not as accurate while you're moving, and I think that's what led to the interceptions.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Cal, so just a little bit of the backstory. So Cal here, he's a transfer from the University of Ohio, which is a D1 program in the U.S. He was there for 3 years. So he transferred in to be the heir apparent to, obviously, Taylor Algersma, who won this game for our school last year, beating Western. And ended up taking us to the Vanier, and he's done pretty well for himself. He's got drafted by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the second round, had a little stint with the Green Bay Packers, absolutely spectacular quarterback, a monster. So bringing in Cal, there was obviously a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure, but to be honest with you, for most of the season, and honestly the whole season almost, Cal absolutely lived up to the expectations, actually breaking Laurier's single-season touchdown passes record through 26, and the offense really just didn't look like it missed a beat. Of course, that a big part of that comes from the MVP of the OUA, Ethan Jordan, who unfortunately broke his wrist against Windsor late in the season. Actually had to miss both playoff games, both against Guelph and Queens. But even without Ethan Jordan, there's still a lot of great weapons. You look at Laomi Ojitolayo, you look at Ryan Hughes, you look at Jackson Stebbings, Jace Atkinson. There's a lot of great weapons on this offense, and it's kind of disappointing when you really see what happened in the first half on Saturday. So he throws five picks in the first half. The first one was a disaster, right? Like, you were there. First one, it feels like he just didn't see the linebacker, and he hits him in the chest. And then, so they end up scoring a touchdown there. They go up early. Alex Varekin played honestly a pretty clean game, right? I'm sure you'll have some stats for that in a few minutes. But yeah, he played a pretty clean game. He throws a touchdown early, but then just things didn't feel like they got better. I felt like things were kind of a little bit off. You get three tip ball interceptions, which is just really unfortunate. Ryan Hughes gets a ball punched out that just seemingly goes right into somebody's stomach. And then you get another one of those from Laomi Ojotolayo, which was also very unlucky. They both played great games, by the way, Ryan and Laomi.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's
for sure.
And then there's the screen. You're in 2 minute drill. You're looking to get points on the board. And then there's a ball that just bounces off a chest plate or face off, something like that. Something just bounces super high in the air, goes right to another Queens defender. So there's three of the five picks right there. Just super, super unlucky. And to be honest with you, they only had one pick six, but they pretty much had three. Like two of them they get down to like inside the 10, and those are going to be touchdowns, right? Especially when Queens is such a great running game and Alex Freken played a very good game as well.
Yeah.
Pretty much three pick sixes right there, right? They only scored 30 points, right? Those are those three touchdowns right there, which is really, really unfortunate. But going into halftime, Frankie, you could probably attest to this. It really didn't feel like they were out of the game.
No, it didn't at all. Laurier had sitting there and watching it the whole time. I'm thinking to myself, hey, man, we can come back. We can come back. We can come back. And you mentioned Vrekin. He played a clean game, yeah, but a 59% completion rate. Like, it's not exactly what you'd call a good performance. But again, Cal had a higher completion rate. Cal had more passing yards. I think he had more TDs. I think he had two. But again, because of those interceptions, tanks his passer rating, and Vrekin comes out with an 89.9 to Cal's 55.
I see. Well, to be fair, my only objection to that would be that they have very different roles and very different roles inside the game as well. Like, you look at Cal. Cal was really just playing from behind the entire game, right? Like, you go down early, obviously, you throw the five interceptions in the first half. And so you got your five turnovers there. And in the second half, you almost have to throw the ball like the entire time. There were some good rushing numbers actually from Quentin Avery Scott. He played a very good game. He had a very big game actually. And then you look at Tayshaun Jackson, the other running back, who's a monster, probably the best return in the country. They both made some big plays, but in the second half, they really started to catch some fire, right, Frankie? Like, they started off with a 2-0, they get the ball back immediately, quickly score. And just like that, they make it a two-score game, right, with some time to go. And there was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of excitement in the crowd. I had some buddies who weren't at the game, and I was calling them. I was like, you got to get here. You got to get here. They're about to do this. They're about to make this ridiculous 27-3 comeback, which is what the score was at halftime. And it's crummy. It's crummy that they don't end up being able to come away with it. Like, another big thing, you look at the turnovers, but for me, a big thing which kind of drives me crazy, and I'm sure drives Coach Fault crazy, drives Coach Galloway crazy, and obviously drives Cal and the rest of the group crazy, is just there was two drives where they get inside the 10 and you come away with field goals, right? Like, you come away with field goals, and you really just can't do that when you're losing. Like, you got to hang sevens. You can't hang threes, right?
Yeah, of course.
And that's just really, really crummy. And I feel terrible for them for that. And then obviously on the last drive, like, tell us a little bit about the last drive, Frankie.
Well, the last drive was a good one. Honestly, they were coming down the field. They got about to the 35, and Cal makes a great throw to, I think it was Ryan Hughes, and he jumps up. Queens defenders, honestly, from where I was sitting, looked like it was right on his back. Hands are over the shoulders, and the ball comes out. It's incomplete. Now, this may be biased, but I think it was a missed pass interference call. And I think with the time they had on the clock, that extra 15 yards they get from the PI definitely helps them in getting that. Maybe even just a field goal to tie the game, force it to overtime. But I think they were doing pretty well that last drive. But again, it stalls out just because of a couple incompletions.
Yeah, a couple incompletions. That last play, yeah, going to Laomi Ojotolayo, it could have definitely been PI. You probably had a better angle on it than I did. Being you were more in the middle. I was in the beer garden, so I was kind of at the back there, like in the end zone.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have a great angle, and I've seen some clips. I guess he gets there a little bit early. Like, he definitely does. It's a hard call to make. Like, it's a hard call to make there. And it sucks that they don't make it for Laurier, but to be honest with you, the bigger error there, and I think this is probably the play right here. This is the play of the game in my eyes. It's like the interceptions. There was a lot of bad luck, I think, and there was a lot of just like kind of things that just didn't go the way that they really should have. I honestly think Cal played a pretty good game, to be honest with you. But the one that drives me crazy is is the dropped snap on second and four. So I guess the backstory, second and four, it looks to be a handoff for Tayshaun Jackson. They've been running the ball pretty well on the drive so far. And he drops the snap. I don't know what he was looking at. I don't know if he was looking at a linebacker for a potential read or something. But he takes his eyes off the ball for a sec, drops the snap, and you get to third and 11 now, which is now passing down, which leads to a throw, which leads to the incompletion right there. And that's just, oh, Frankie, man, like, oh, absolute killer.
You're watching that, and you're like, okay, second and four, just little run, and we got it. Yeah, and he drops a snap, and you're looking at it like, oh, man.
Yeah, things change change a lot.
It's just a mistake you don't want to make, right? I would say at this level, but and again, it's university football, right? But you don't want to make that mistake.
Yeah, at all,
especially in such a high stakes stakes environment.
At all levels of football, it's just a crucial error, and it's something that you really can't do late in the game, especially in a moment like that. Which is just really disappointing. But even after that, crazy enough, the Laurier actually had a chance to get the ball back because they had a timeout, and they had a chance to get the ball back with about 35 seconds left, I believe, because they got to 3rd and 3, but for whatever reason, Queens wanted to go for it. Queens wanted to run the ball with Jared Kasari. They're all OUA, I believe actually maybe even all Canadian running back. He's an absolute monster. He had over 100 yards against the Golden Hawks on Saturday, and he just had a great season. He played really, really well against Windsor. And yeah, he's just an absolute monster. But 3rd and 3, the great thing about Canadian football as well is that there's lots of opportunities for the clock to stop if you get the stop. So you get back the ball, 33 seconds left. That's actually a lot of time. As for all these first downs, the clock's going to keep on going. And the clock stops until you're on the ball. So there's lots of chances for you to actually get down the field. But unfortunately, Jared Kasari, they ran, they ran stretch right. They ran right behind the right tackle, and he punches it in, and That was kind of all she wrote for the Golden Hawks. It's really disappointing stuff. Like, it's such a crazy sport, football. It's not like hockey where it's best of 7 or best of 5. But
That's definitely true. Football, it's one game and you're done. That's it.
Yeah, and it's sad for Laurier, right? Like, for Laurier, it wasn't even one game. They were the best team in the country the entire year. They blew out almost everybody, pretty much everybody. They played such good ball the entire year, but they played one bad half. They doubled Queens in yards. I think you were saying to me earlier, 280 to 140.
280 to 140,
which, exactly, is crazy. Yeah. They played so well. I really didn't feel that Queens was the better team. They really weren't the better team. But you look at one bad half, 5 turnovers in a championship game, and that's just crucial, right? Settling for field goals and turning the ball over is just a recipe for disaster, which is terrible when they're making great special teams plays. When Tayshaun Jackson's having big returns and Luke Rayner's blocking punts. Like, they had a lot of things that actually went very, very well for them in that game. And it just hurts. I really feel for some of these fifth year guys who've been really big contributors to this team over the last couple of years. And it's like, it's kind of sad. Obviously, hopefully, like you were saying before, Vanier next year, that would obviously be spectacular, but you just never really know. You never really know what the season's going to look like next year. We're only in November, right? There's a lot of things that are due to change. And, like, you don't know how these other schools are going to line up. And, I'm sick about it. It's really, really crummy. But that's football, right? That's how it goes. And, yeah, that's how she goes. We'll get off some Laurier football for a little while. We're going to talk about a little bit of a positive now, actually, which is Laurier hockey.
That's true.
Laurier hockey. They had a very good weekend. Laurier men's hockey, they played pretty well. How did the Laurier women's do? Sorry.
So Laurier men put up,
they did a good job. Tell us a little bit about that. Our regional hockey expert, Frankie, here.
The Laurier men, after going 7-0 and dropping 3 in a row, it's not exactly what you want, right? When you're trying to uphold a reputation as, like, a team with a new identity again. Last year, an abysmal season for the men's team, going 5-12, 4 of those wins being in overtime. But they've really turned it around. Again, 3 in a row, you're coming into a game against York on the 15th, which is a team that they've done well against all season, a couple of 4-2 victories. But in that 3-2 win against, so their last game was a 3-2 win against Waterloo, but we're going to go back to the 6th where they played Western, and it was a 2-0 shutout victory for Andrew Ness, which is, again, a kid who gave Laurier the first loss of the season. I think a kid who just needed his confidence back, and I think these last couple games, these last two wins where he's played two in a row, they gave him Athlete of the Week. I think that's exactly what he needs to get his confidence up. And two goals from Maxence Melançon, again, exactly, that's like what you want. That's what you want from your team, and I think the boys are just playing good hockey. And on the women's side, again, it's been a good start to the year so far. I don't know what the record is.
Obviously, with the women's teams, there's lots of expectations. Like you mentioned with the hockey team last year, you only won four games last year. Did you say they started the season 7-0?
This year, yeah.
Yeah. See, that's just crazy. So obviously, the men's hockey team. With that, there's obviously a lot of excitement, but there's a lot of expectation now, because now they're looked at as a team that can compete. So it's nice to see that they played well on the weekends. But now talking, I guess, a little bit about the women's, they're a team that has a lot of really, really high level young players who got really, they almost got validated for it. I guess last year they had a player who won Rookie of the Year. They had a couple all rookie team selection members, and I guess just tell us a little bit about how they're doing right now, Frankie.
So last game for the women was on the 7th, and it was a 4-3 loss to Queens. Again, exactly like those one-goal games have been very common on the women's side. Last couple of games, again, you go back all the way back to the 18th. You have to go all the way back to the 17th against Nipissing for their last game with over two goals of spread. So they won 4-0 against Nipissing on the 18th. And the last games going all the way back have all been one or two goals. Again, not exactly the most sustainable way to win games, but the women are doing what they do best. And that is coming up, and that is coming in clutch in the moments where they need to. And again, sixth in all of Canada. That's what you want. That's what they're expecting coming into this year. Bit of an off year a couple of years ago, but then again, they stormed back last year. Had a pretty good season, and now they're looking to do the same thing. And their next game is against Carleton on the 14th.
Are you calling that?
No.
No?
My next one is the men's, 21st.
The 21st. Oh, okay. I see. Okay. So that's talking, I guess, a little bit about some Laurier hockey. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk a little bit about some basketball, because it was a very, 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 very interesting weekend for Laurier men's basketball. Laurier women's, I got a chance to watch one of the games where they played Nipissing, actually. To be honest with you, Laurier women's, they definitely had a weekend to forget. They didn't play terrific on either side of the ball. Defense or offense, they didn't shoot the ball that great. And it was kind of just, I don't know, it felt like they were kind of just getting into these funks and having kind of issues getting their way out of them. Like watching them against Nipissing, they went down big early, and then it felt like they were just trying to claw back the entire game. And when every time they would cut it close, Nipissing would go on a run and make the lead bigger again, similar to like how it was with Laurentian. So they lost by 32 to Laurentian, 78-46, then 78-56. It really feels like they're just looking for more consistent scoring, or just looking for someone who they can just give the ball to and say, hey, I need you to go get me a bucket, right? Maybe that's going to be Britton Graves. Maybe that's going to be Kira Aikman. We don't really know yet. Maybe that's going to be Kate White. We don't know yet, but that's something that they're going to have to figure out as they look to have a big year, of course. On more positive things, though, the men's team honestly showed a lot of promise this weekend. They really, really did. Talking a little bit about their first game, so they played against Laurentian, and then they played Nipissing back-to-back. Both games are at home. And I got a chance to go to the first game against Laurentian. And I'll tell you, they started off the game hot against Laurentian. This looked like a team that they were going to blow out. It looked like they were going to be all over Laurentian. They were actually up by 19 at half, Frankie. I'll tell you, 19 at half. Yeah, it was an absolute crapshoot for Laurentian early. And I'll tell you, I had plans Friday night. And I was like, all right, 19. I'm going to watch the third quarter. And by the fourth quarter, it's going to be done. And I can go home. That's what I was thinking. Little did I know. Laurentian starts to make a little bit of a push in the third quarter. They end up cutting it to 10. So now I have to say, because it's a 10-point game. And Laurentian caught fire in the fourth, beating Laurier, actually, by 7. 70-63. And there was a lot of issues for the Golden Hawks, I must say. They shot 8-for-30 from the field in the second half. And honestly, just watch them play, they just couldn't get any good looks. They really couldn't. Ethan Passley, they were doing a good job keeping him really in a box almost, in a sense where he was getting himself good looks. But I think he's at his best, the starting point guard for the Golden Hawks, Ethan Passley. I think he's at his best when he can create for others because he's so athletic. He's so twitchy. And I find that multiple guys have to collapse on him when he drives. But they were doing a good job of really not biting on that. And it's because of that, they couldn't get open looks. They weren't hitting shots. And honestly, it was weird as well. They're Aiden Whalen, who I feel is their best scorer. He didn't play that much in the second half. He had some foul trouble. He only took 7 shots, which obviously, Frankie, like, you know, being a hockey guy, when your best player isn't shooting the ball to the puck and you're not scoring, it's a crapshoot, right? Like, it's something
that
you
don't feel. You gotta give the guy that you know can score, you gotta give him the rock, man. Like, you gotta be able to get that guy the ball at all costs, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? That's kind of what you would like, especially when they weren't scoring the ball well. But then on the Laurentian side, this guy, Bryce Vandio, he was an absolute monster. He finished with 20 on the night, I believe 14 coming the second half. And he was just hitting everything, man. Left-hand layups, right-hand layups, step-back threes. Like, oh my gosh. It was just a headache to watch. It really was hard to watch. But lucky for them, when you lose on a back-to-back, the positive is that you get a chance to get it right back tomorrow. So they on Saturday night, they got a chance to host Nipissing, who was actually coming off against a big win against Waterloo, who Laurier also beat earlier in the season. Nice to see Waterloo losing. Of course, us being Laurier students. So they got a chance to play Nipissing. And to be honest with you, the first half of that game was a lot of the same issues I was having with them in the first game against Laurentian, which was they were winning, but they weren't shooting the ball well at all. They were abysmal. They were, I think, 2 for 17 in the first half from three. Like, it was a disaster, and they just weren't getting good looks. They weren't scoring the ball. They were doing a lot of things not that great. The positives, though, is that they were winning the turnover battle, and they were out-rebounding them. So they had lots of chances. They're up 30-26 at half. But in the second half, I can't even lie, Frankie. They looked like a completely different ball club. It was ridiculous. You get 23 second half points out of LeBan Abdullah off the bench, 5 threes. Ethan Passley goes for 20 as well. And they end up going for, I think they scored 91 points. They won 91 to, like,
I think it was 90. It's 93.
93 to what?
93 to 57. I want to say 57.
93 to 57. Like, oh my gosh.
That is a crazy game. That's a crazy score.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And they only had 30 at halftime. They looked like two totally different ball clubs. I actually got a chance to commentate. I got a chance to call that game on Saturday night. And what I was just kind of harping on the whole game was, like, these guys have to get better looks. And when they get these looks, they have to shoot them. They felt like they were kind of being a little bit passive. Some guys who weren't shooting the ball that great. Not that their confidence was lower, but they weren't being as aggressive as they could be. But whatever Coach Cavell said to those guys at halftime worked, because those guys could not miss. They were absolutely on fire.
I mean, hey, 60% from three in the fourth quarter, that's
going to do it for you.
That's going to do it, exactly.
And they were hitting, like, oh my gosh, man. They were hitting absolutely everything. It was fun to watch. They were doing a lot. They were playing very good ball. And it really makes you feel good about this upcoming weekend against good programs, Carleton, Ottawa. Carleton obviously being one of the best programs in the country.
Oh, yeah.
And if they can shoot the ball like this, sorry to interrupt you. If they can shoot the ball like this, they can really beat anybody in the country. Like, they really can. You're going to be looking for consistent scorers, as obviously it's early in the year. A lot of things are a little bit different now with losing some key vets last year, of course. But if you're getting some of that off-the-bench production from LeBan Abdullah, Aiden Whalen played a pretty good second half. Ethan Passley played a great game all around. If you're getting production out of those guys and then some other guys get hot for you, this is a team that can compete with anyway, don't you think?
I think so, yeah. I think, if you're getting your guys that score, if they're getting the ball, they're getting their looks, then, hey, man, if you shoot the ball, you're going to score. That's all I can really say.
Fair enough. Shoot the ball, you're going to score. So we're going to take a little break now from Laurier hockey, Laurier basketball, and, of course, Laurier football, which we're going to end on. We're kind of going to talk a little bit about now NHL hockey, because that season now is up and running. Baseball season's over. Obviously, the LA Dodgers won the World Series. We're going to keep tabs on what's going on with Bo Bichette. Obviously, many teams are interested in him. The word on the street is they would like him to play second base or shortstop, which obviously, as I'm sure you know, Frankie, that just makes sense. He's not that great of a defensive shortstop, but that bat's one of the best in the league.
That bat this year, he he played like a different man. He was consistent. He had, I'm pretty sure he had a 300 average. Almost, if not almost 300. But again, he's a bat that would be viable on any team in the league. And I think there's going to be a lot of teams that are offering to pay a pretty penny for his services.
Absolutely. He's a guy you have to pay. You really got to hope that he likes Toronto and that he doesn't hate going through customs and that he loves Vladdy and all that crew. Because that'd be a great guy to stay. And I would personally, obviously, if the only way he's going to come back is as a shortstop, then obviously you kind of got to bite the bullet and bring him back as a shortstop. But, oh, man, if you could bring back Bo Bichette, let's say you get 2 years – or no, 8 years, $200 million.
Yeah.
You're paying a lot for him, and you're paying a lot for a guy who might be a second baseman. But if you're getting that guy back as a second baseman, that's the best second baseman in baseball.
Exactly.
He's an absolute monster. He's at the top of your lineup. He's going to bat two or three for you for the next 7 or 8 years.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. And then you have Andrés Giménez, who's a better shortstop defensively, and you can put him in your nine hole because –
Exactly. He's what you want.
He's not going to hit the ball great, but he's going to do his job, which is be defensive.
Yeah, of course. He's one of the best defensive middle infielders in the league. And you just want to bring back the Jays. What I will say about the Jays, and I was more critical on them earlier in the year than I probably should have been, because they ended up playing so great, obviously. They probably should have won the World Series, but they shot themselves in the leg a couple times. They got a lot of big production from some guys who aren't really historically big hitting producers. We all know about their defense, obviously the best defensive team in the league. But that's a team that I really feel that they need to add a bat or two in the winter. And bringing back Bo is so crucial, because you need these bats. You need these guys who aren't striking out. You need these guys who are hitting the ball hard, because that's what's going to win you games in the playoffs when you're getting good starting pitching from Kevin Gausman, Trey Savage.
I think so too.
And the crew.
I think the only problem is where you're gonna get a big bat. Where are you gonna put him? Because your DH spot is taken by Springer. You don't want you're kind of trying to avoid getting Springer in the field because he is getting up there in age. But I think if the Jays do go all in on a bat, they cash all their chips into one guy. I think they try to sign Kyle Schwarber to a little bridge deal.
Kyle Schwarber,
guy's a huge bat. He's a little bit on the older side. You can play him. He's an outfielder, but.
No,
you don't want to put him.
No, he's a DH. No, no,
he's a DH. You don't want to put him in the field.
You bring in Kyle Schwarber.
He's playing DH.
You bring in Kyle Schwarber if you want to put George Springer in the outfield. The one thing about bringing George Springer in the outfield is that you already have Anthony Santander, who they also took a big swing on last offseason. He got paid, I believe, 4 years, $92 million,
something like that. Yeah,
he got paid, or no, 5 years, $92 million, maybe. And he's supposed to be a big bat. He's a 40 home run guy. Let's not forget. But he was just. He just couldn't get into a groove this year, Frankie.
I think he was riddled with injuries. I think if the injury bug didn't bite him as hard as it did, he could have been a different player. But the games that he did play weren't his best, but they also weren't his worst.
Right.
He had a pretty decent year. He had a couple of clutch bombs, but other than that, it's not like. You're looking at him and like, okay, he could be better. Like we could have gotten someone more with our money, right? Like he could have gotten a better bat with your money.
No, you definitely could, but that's a guy that I'm saying in my head, you need to add a bat. But to be honest with you, if you get a guy like that contributing next year, if he's back to the 30, 40 home run a year guy, then that's the bat that you need right there. You bring back Bo. That's a pretty good looking squad, I must say, going into next year. You feel very, very good about that. And then you might want to bring in an arm. I'd love for them to bring in a starting pitcher.
Bring in an arm. I was just gonna say my hot take is I'm pretty sure he's a free agent. Is Framber Valdez?
Framber Valdez
from Houston.
Ranger Suarez is a free agent as well. Both stud lefties. It would be great to bring in a lefty. I really didn't like this year that when they brought in Scherzer, I didn't like that they moved Eric Lauer to the bullpen. Eric Lauer ended up giving him some big innings because he was such a great lefty for him this year. And especially in the AL East, when you're playing a team like the Yankees and now the Red Sox, who are emerging as well, you need lefties, because these teams' best hitters are lefties. You need that lefty-lefty matchup, because that's such a positive, in my opinion. In baseball, when you get lefty-lefty, you're such an advantage as a pitching staff that you can just, there's a lot of different things you can do to attack them. So you bring in a guy like Ranger Suarez, who's gonna command a lot of money. He's gonna get paid. he's going to get himself $150 million easier. True.
Rodgers Communications. You better sign some hefty checks.
Yeah, hopefully, right?
You want your baseball team to be competitive.
Those guys got money. I've seen what their college looks like in Muskoka. Those guys got money. So, yeah, hopefully they want to spend some and they want to bring back Bo and they want to go get themselves another arm, a reliever maybe as well.
That's true.
And then they go from there, and then hopefully we can relive that season in 2026. On the topic of not spending money and bringing your guy back, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, no.
Frankie, you got to go after him. Talk about him a little. Because they absolutely played terrible last night, by the way, against the Bruins.
My thing is that the big story with the Leafs this year is you cannot replace an 100-point player with three 30-point players.
No, you can't.
You can't. And I love Matias Michelli. He's doing exactly what he needs to do. Dakota Joshua and Nick Waugh, not so much. I think Craig Berube putting them all on the third line together, it's just not what I would do if you're trying to get these guys acclimated and build up team chemistry. I liked when he played with Matthews and Nyes, when you have Michelli, Matthews, Nyes. Love that line.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it when Tavares and Nylander play together. Love that line. Stacking that first line with Matthews, Nylander, and then I want to say it was Domi last night on that third spot on the first line. No, I don't think Matthews and Nylander can play together on the same line unless it's on the power play.
And that's because
they both play the same style of hockey. They are the guy that drives the play, and they are the guy that shoots. You got guys, because I think Tavares and Nylander work so well together, is because Tavares is going to give him the puck. Tavares is going to give Nylander the puck and go sit in front of the net. That's what Marner used to do. Marner used to give Matthews the puck. He wouldn't sit in front of the net. That was Nyes' job. But Marner would give him the puck. But if Michelli, so now Michelli has to be groomed and molded into that Marner role of giving Matthews the puck. And I think once they figure out that Michelli can be that guy, then that line of Matthews and Michelli and Nyes will be amazing. Because Nyes is going to do what he does. He's going to drive the play. He's going to be a power forward. He's going to be that big physical guy. But Michelli's got to mold himself into that playmaker role. And Berube's got to be able to do that and be able to move up his lines accordingly.
I see. And that's, having a guy like Michelli contribute for you is just going to be so darn important, right? Because like you said, you really can't replace a 100-point guy like Mitch Marner, who's, you look at their power play right now, their power play is a disaster. And of course, right, he was the point guard of their power play last year. Mitch Marner, obviously homegrown Toronto guy, was an absolute force for the Leafs for quite a few years. Unfortunately, after some really bad postseason performances, the city kind of felt like the city almost turned on him, which kind of sucks now because he gets to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
Not the worst thing in the world, right? Gets exiled to Vegas.
And you see that commercial where he says, "I hate working from home," and it just like, oh, it makes me so mad whenever I see that commercial.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, It's definitely a little bit cringy. But another thing for these, which drives me crazy, and I was telling this to you when I walked in, I hate that they just haven't done a great job of just hitting on their first two, three round picks. Like,
oh yeah.
Like you look at a guy like Easton Cohen, and of course, we still have a lot of confidence in that guy, right? He was obviously a monster in London. And he still has the potential to be an absolute stud. But that's a guy that I want to see on the team. Like, why is he not on the big boy team?
I think it's because they're paying Scott Laughton $4 million to do what? What are they paying this guy to do, right? So the least problem with their third and fourth line is that there's too much rotation. There's a good six or seven guys.
Oh, man.
That can...
That's terrible.
It's true though. That can genuinely play at the NHL level, and Berube's playing shuffle with his third and fourth line, and he's not giving Cowan the looks he needs. Those 10 games that Cowan played that trial period, they were good games. I think it's undeserved that he's sitting in the AHL right now, along with David Kampf. Your penalty kill is not great. You need a guy like that. Put him in as your fourth line center. He can do that because he plays a defensive-minded game. But then again, you do that, and now your guys like Scott Laughton, Steven Lorenz, and those guys don't have a spot on the team now. So what are you going
to
do, right?
So someone has to get moved.
Someone does have to get moved.
I see. Okay. So the issue with that, and I wouldn't say that as much of an issue. It's kind of just I'm a little bit crazy with stuff like that. I want the big swing. I want the big headline. something like that, you're probably going to get like anywhere from a fourth to a seventh round pick, right? So it's going to be kind of a boring move. On the positive, though, like you were saying actually earlier when we spoke, that puts you in a position at the deadline to move for kind of a third pairing style defenseman, a third pairing quality defenseman, which would be nice. It'd be nice to have more defense depth. I honestly, the last 2 years, I've honestly liked their, I like their top four. Zach, I don't know if that's crazy to say. You obviously know hockey more than I am.
No.
I like their top four, but it always kind of feels like that third pairing is just getting gashed.
So that's definitely happening. The third pairing is definitely getting gashed, but I don't think you change it because Oliver Ekman-Larsson is having a career resurgence in Toronto. His last couple of years in Arizona were horrible. Before getting to Florida, he hadn't scored a goal in 100 games.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Hadn't scored a goal in a season and a half. He scores in the Stanley Cup playoffs to tie the game for Florida in, I think it was game four against Toronto.
Of course he does.
Of course, obviously. But then he came here and he's having a career resurgence. He's doing exactly what he needed to do, and that was play on the third pairing.
Well, and he's the peeper guy as well.
He is the peeper guy, and I think that's a good job for him. Simon Benoit, I love Simon Benoit. He was a great pickup. We got him for absolutely nothing from Anaheim, and he's doing his job. But I think now that you have Tanev injured, and again, your defense core is getting up there in age, your two young guys are Brendan Carlo and Morgan Riley, who have both had long stints in the league.
Yeah.
So I feel like you either need to give your prospects some looks. Right now, their best defensive prospect is Ben Danford, and I don't think he's NHL ready yet. Or you need to use David Kampf, trade him for a fourth, and use that fourth to pick up a stay-at-home shutdown guy at the deadline, move OEL up to the second pairing, or even keep him on the third and put that guy that you trade for, get a second pairing defenseman.
Yeah, see, that would be a pretty ideal, because the issue with Toronto is that this team right now, how it looks right now, this is not a team that's going to go win the Stanley Cup.
No.
Right? It's not. They're not playing that great. They're not that great on special teams. Their goaltending, I actually like Anthony Stolarz. I think he did a great job last year. And I still have confidence in him being the guy, which has been nice because there hasn't been a guy like that since Freddie a couple years ago, and I was never that big of a Freddie guy. But anyways, the issue though is that you have a guy, you have Austin Matthews, who you're gonna have for a couple more years. You have Jonathan Tavares, who career resurgence. You talk about career resurgence with OEL. Jonathan Tavares, people were calling for this guy's house to be burned down. People were not happy with this guy a couple years ago, and now he's just playing great hockey. He had 40 goals last year. Had a great year. 40 goals, right?
Yeah.
I'm right about 40 that? Goals. Okay, yeah. So he had a great year last year. He does a really good job with Willie Nylander, like you were saying. You have a guy like Willie Nylander. You have Morgan Riley. You have these high-level pieces, and these are pieces that, like, you don't want to waste these guys. Like, you really don't want to waste these guys. Like, it's an absolute disaster. Like, we talk about this with the Bills with Josh Allen. Not that they're wasting him, but, like, you gotta build an all-star cast around these guys, because like, how often are you gonna get a guy like Austin Matthews? Like, how lucky are the Leafs that you got because of lottery balls and you being bad for a couple of years? The Leafs have been bad for 50 years. They've been bad for 50 years because of lottery balls. You got Marner, Nylander, Morgan Riley, and Willie and Matthews. Those four guys in a span of like 5 years.
Yeah,
how lucky is that? How lucky are you that? That's somebody, I think it was the Coyotes. They want to take Dylan Strome over Mitch Marner. So now you get Mitch Marner at number four, and then you get Matthews the next year. And just like that, you're in the playoffs. Just like that, you're the young team. You're the new team on the block, and they have absolutely squandered that opportunity. Mitch Marner's gone. That's a top five playmaker in the league. He's gone. Yeah. He's not coming back.
That's
a disaster.
Between 100 and 110 points out the window for absolutely. Nothing.
And he was,
you let him walk in free agency.
And he was one of your best. And he was one of your. Well, they couldn't trade him because of the no trade clause. That's right? True, he was going to leave. But that's your guy. He's your best penalty killer. He's arguably the most important guy on the power play because
he's your point guard.
Because he runs the offense. Right, he's the point guard. So that's an absolute disaster. But with that being said, there still are young assets that you can move. And I would like to see at the trade deadline or close to it, I would like to see them honestly potentially moving some of these guys, some of these Easton Cohen like guys, some of these first round pick like assets. Because I think you need more juice on this team. I think you need another high level forward. I think you need more goal production that isn't coming from just the top four or five guys on this team.
That's true, yeah.
And And I would love another maybe defense. Like you're talking about adding a lockdown guy at the for like a bottom pairing. See, that would be cool. I think you need a big guy though, right? Like you know about hockey better than I do, but tell me where I'm wrong here.
So where I disagree with you is I don't think the Leafs need another $8-9 million guy. Because
they can't afford it?
Not because they can't afford it. I think so. Cap going up next year, they definitely can. But as of now, no. But what I think is that you need to, as you said, with the Bills and Josh Allen, you need to focus on building around your guys, use them for all that they've got, and then worry about rebuilding. I think you get guys that can complement your players. You get pass type guys. You get pass type guys and shut down D men because Morgan Riley's a puck mover. OEL is a puck mover. And then you've got Brendan Carlo, who's more of a shutdown. And you've got Simon Benoit, who's more of a shutdown. That second pairing is in a little bit of limbo. Because you've got Tanev and you've got Tanev and then we're struggling around with Philippe Myers right now. Because
that's a disaster. Again. It's a disaster, especially when you play in arguably the best, actually, I don't argue, it definitely is the best division in the Eastern Conference, right?
Yeah, the Atlantic Division is very strong this year.
Very strong. And it's only getting stronger, right? Like the Bruins aren't that great of a squad, although they absolutely dog walked the Leafs last night. I swear they beat them earlier in the year as well. It always is with those damn Bruins.
It's always those damn Bruins.
But that's a squad that's rebuilding. You gotta imagine that they're a couple years away. They're not their prospect pool isn't that great, but they're the Bruins. They're a great organization. They're gonna get it kind of figured out, it feels like.
I think the Bruins honestly have a lot more in terms of prospects and in terms of future than we like to think, because you have guys like Mason Lowry and you have younger guys. You have Fraser Minton, who the Leafs gave up.
Of course.
For Brendan Carlo, and you have a first round pick that the Leafs gave up as well. So the Bruins definitely have a couple guys that can rise up. I mean, they had Trent Frederick, but they gave him to Edmonton. I think that's a dumb move on the part of the Bruins because I really like Trent Frederick. He was he was the next Brad Marchand, and I still think he is the next Brad Marchand because he likes to get in your face. Mm-hmm. He likes to throw his hands around, get in your face, and that's the type of player that suits a yellow and black. But again, we're going back to the Leafs. I think the whole thing is you get not a top line guy, but a middle six guy.
Yeah, totally.
Right? You go back and steal back your old prospect Trevor Moore from LA, who's a 20 goal guy. You try to steal Andrew Kopp from the Red Wings. He's another 20-25 goal guy, right? And on the defensive side, I think you need another puck mover. You need a guy who can move his feet. This might be a bit of a reach, but Jamie Drysdale from Philly, he's a homegrown guy.
That won't be cheap.
That won't be cheap at all. You'd have to pay a pretty penny to get him, but he's a younger guy. His ELC ends this year, or he's got two more years on his contract. I don't know. But he's a young guy. He's a puck mover. And he's the future of the game. That's why I really like the Islanders giving Matthew Schaefer such a chance, because that kid is the future of the game. He's a big kid, but he's fast. If you look back in his videos in Erie, he goes and gets pucks himself off of icing. Like, he goes and beats icings himself. He's an unbelievable. And I look at him and I feel like a bit of a failure because that kid's younger than me.
Yeah, but what can you do, right?
Exactly.
So some guys are just drinking different water and drinking different milk,
that's
right?
Definitely for sure. I don't know what they put in that kid's milk, man.
Yeah, something. Definitely different than what they put in mine. But yeah, anyway, so we're gonna pivot now a little bit. We're just going to talk about some basketball. The Raptors are playing very good ball. Have you been following them at all?
A little bit. I watched the last game against the Nets.
Yeah, they played okay last night. Covered the spread, covered the -9.5. They won by 10, actually, which is always nice. For you gamblers out there, they're playing good ball. They're playing efficient ball. Scotty's playing very well. That's what I want to see out of Scotty. Scotty, I want to see the 21, 22 points a game on good shooting. I want to see the boards. I want to see the rebounds. I mean, I want to see the assists. I want to see the rebounds. He's getting steals and blocks. He's just playing good ball. Like, he's playing winning ball. Brandon Ingram, he's done a good job for him. I wasn't actually in love with the move at first, just because I was thinking, like, all right, why are these guys acquiring good players when I feel like they should be tanking? But he ended up missing the rest of the year. They got a high draft pick. who we're going to see about him, Colin, whatever, Murray, something.
Colin Murray Boyles. He's been doing okay off the bench.
Yeah. But I don't know. I didn't feel like he was a scheme fit, but whatever. Anyways, I digress. Brandon Ingram's played great ball. So efficient, man. Like watching him play, he just feels like, it feels like I'm watching like some guy who'd play Kevin Durant in a movie and be able to like impersonate his play style perfectly. Like he's a long, skinny guy.
You look at him and it reminds me of when he played back on the Pelicans, right?
Yeah. Like he's playing great ball. Brandon Ingram is playing great ball. Like he gets to his spot every time. Of course he's shooting over everybody because he's like 6'9", 6'10", right? He's obviously a beast. And then you look at RJ, who I've never been that big of an RJ guy either. Let's be honest. I've been a hater for a lot of these Raptors. I've not been that high on them, but they're playing great ball. RJ's playing great ball. He's playing efficient ball, which is what you want. These guys are shooting 50% from the field, good 3-point marks. They're hitting free throws, and like this is a team. Am I crazy to say that they can compete in the Eastern Conference?
No, I think so. I think looking at a little bit the other games, teams that are usually really bad are doing really good this year. Like the Pistons have a decent record, Sixers have a decent record, and they were abysmal last couple of years.
Yeah, that is fair.
But I think I always liked the RJ Barrett move. I liked the Brandon Ingram move. Again, I agree with you when I thought they should be tanking, but I like the Brandon Ingram move. Scottie's playing great. Again, I think that the moves that people originally raised an eyebrow to are starting to pay off now, and I feel like it's going to work for them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what you need. Obviously, there's new management with Masai being gone now, right? So there's obviously lot of things that are different now. But I must say, this new group's doing a pretty good job. I don't know what their head coach's name, Vladek something, probably. I don't know,
like Raj something or something like that.
Anyways, he's a big European guy. He's doing a good job. The team appears to like him. And they're also playing good ball. You are right. There are a lot of teams that have been not been that great the last few years that are playing well. Obviously, the Pistons. Cade's obviously a stud. He missed like 40 shots the other night, but whatever. He's a stud. The Sixers are a good squad. That's what happens. When you hit on your young draft picks, Vijay Edgecombe looks like a stud. Jared McCann looks like a stud. Tyrese Maxey is a stud. And obviously, like, who knows what's going on with Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid, oh God.
Joel Embiid's a disaster. Like, probably the most the biggest disaster of an MVP, like, possible. Like, oh my gosh, man, they can't get that guy on the court for anything. They're paying him like $70 million a year or something like that. But anyways, they're a good squad. And then like a team that was bad last year, it's a great squad. Victor Wembanyama is like, you can't even make him in a video game.
No, I think he's a freak of nature.
Like, it's crazy to like in my eyes, at absolute minimum, in my opinion, he's the third best player in the league. At absolute minimum. Like the most I'll hear is that Shea and Jokic are better than him, which is like fair, whatever. They got the accolades. You can't tell me that Luka Doncic is better than this guy.
No.
You almost can't even tell me that Jokic is better than this guy. Like this guy, he's 7'4", and he's like, he's crossing guys up and hitting threes.
Yeah.
Gets 5 blocks every night.
Yeah. And the guy's 7'4", and he's moving like a 6'3" point guard.
Yes. He runs around. It feels like watching Kevin Durant, but he's bigger, plays like way better defense. Victor Wembanyama is like so obviously the defensive player of the year. Like it's just so obvious.
Yeah.
Like he's literally the best defender in the league. He's so dominant. Like his arms are just everywhere, right?
You know,
like,
you know what that reminds me of actually? Shifting focus to the NCAA. There's a guy on Florida. He's a freshman. He's 7'9". He's from Quebec. Olivier Rieu. I watched like little clips of this guy playing. It looks like Wembanyama out there. The kid is
really. He can run around.
Kid is nuts. He can
no
move.
Way.
He can move. If for
but there's no way he can dribble though. And there's no way
for
he can,
such
like,
a big guy. He like you know how you'll like freakishly tall guys like they look freakishly tall because they're always so like skinny and whatever. He looks like a normal ass dude.
Okay, I'm gonna search Skype quickly.
You gotta Google.
I also don't even believe that. That's ridiculous.
I saw him. He came into the game. I'm like the camera. They literally had to move the camera, and I'm like, oh my god. Yeah.
So is he like obviously going number one overall?
I think he's still either a freshman or sophomore. So he's got a couple of years to cook in the NCAA.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In college basketball, you're like if you're the guy, you're going immediately. Like it's a little bit different than other schools. I mean, other sports. 7'9". Yeah. Let's see, Olivier
Rieu.
Oh, okay. He doesn't. The issue is he doesn't really play that much. Like he's not that good for him.
Because I think he's just starting out. That's why.
And he's just big, right? But like, because the things about these big guys, and what worries me about Wemby, and I just really hope this doesn't happen because he's just like man, is he fun to watch. Like, man, is he fun to watch. But with these big guys, these big lanky guys too, man, like, they just get hurt.
Yeah.
Like, they, like, he's just so freaking big, man. Like, this guy, Giroux or Ryu or whatever, he's 7'9". That, like, there's no way, like that it's, guy just cannot, not
sustainable.
That guy just cannot play big minutes for you. And Wemby, obviously, he had the blood clots and all that stuff last year, which was terrible. It's nice to see that he's back. But, like, it's just an absolute, like, you just got to hope he stays healthy. Because if he stays healthy, the Spurs are instantly a team that can win the championship. Because Wemby is, like, he just takes over every night. Like, even when he isn't shooting well, which isn't happening, because, like, every shot is an open shot for him because he's, like, the biggest guy ever. He's still an absolute force on the defensive end. Like, it's impossible to drive against that guy. He's contesting everything, or he's blocking everything he's not contesting, right? Like, it's pretty impressive. It's very, very impressive.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. It's impossible to shoot over that guy.
Mm-hmm. So now we're just trying to end. Frankie, did you watch a little bit of football this weekend?
A little bit. Yeah, it was a little bit. I had the Bills game on, and then I turned it off and did not watch anything else. I can't lie to you.
Fair enough. The Bills.
That was not a good game.
The Bills would make anybody want to stop watching football because those guys played terrible on Sunday. They played terrible. They lost, I believe, 30-13 against the Dolphins, who the Dolphins, like, for the last month and a half, people have been coming with pitchforks for Mike McDaniel and Tua.
I was going to say, yeah.
Coming with pitchforks.
And you look at, again, another thing where the stats will lie to you about the game. You look at Josh Allen's stats. I think he doubled Tua's passing yards. Tua didn't hit 200 passing yards, only threw one passing touchdown.
Yeah, that is fair. What I would kind of just comment on a little bit with that is, like, with that stuff can be misleading because it doesn't tell you game script. So, like,
yeah,
Tua didn't throw the ball as much because, well, one, obviously Devon Achane, he is a force. He's so good. He's so freaking fast. And, like, no one can catch that guy. So, obviously, he had a sick day. But also, like the Bills were turning the ball over. Like Josh Allen, you get a brutal fumble on a tush push from Josh Allen, which is just, like, you just can't do that when you're losing, right? Like, exactly. They actually had a chance. They were pressing to, like, make it a game, fumbles. But, like, Tua's a game manager. Tua's, like, a Jared Goff-style guy. Jared Goff's obviously, like, the best game manager in the league. Like, he's the best at, like, that role in the league. But, like, Tua's a guy, like, he's just doing, like, whatever he needs to. Like, if he's going to hit that little screen or the slant or, like, the out, whatever. He's going to hit that, and he did everything he needed to win against a Bills team that is – the Bills look like they're in trouble, Frankie.
I think so, too. I think we need a little bit of a shakeup. Maybe – it might be coaching staff. It might not be. We need – something needs to change. It's either Sean McDermott's gone or we need, like, a big splash in free agency with a cornerback or a wide receiver because our defense is a problem.
Yeah, the defense is a disaster. I think it's the worst run D in the league, and it just sucks, man. Like, this team is so has been so hampered by injuries. Like, you lose Matt Milano, your all-pro linebacker. You lose Ed Oliver, who's having a monster year at defensive tackle. He's having a career year. He got paid a lot of money as well. You just lost another guy, Hoyt, I believe his name is. He just popped his Achilles, which is obviously such a sad injury to see. Achilles means you're pretty much done for, to be honest with you. It's honestly a team. It's honestly a more flawed Bills team than we've seen in years past, and it sucks because this is a year where it feels like the AFC. There's a lot more big players in the AFC than past years, right? Like, before it was kind of just like the Chiefs and Ravens, but, like, you can't tell me the Patriots don't look like they're for real.
Yeah.
Or the Chargers.
Colts.
The Colts, absolutely. The Broncos, Bo Nix. Bo Nix. Bo Nix is just, he's been terrible for the last couple of weeks. But
yeah,
that defense can shut down anybody. I'm really, really, really excited to see them against the Chiefs this weekend.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great game.
That'll be a good game, yeah.
That's because sure. The Chiefs, I'm a Patrick Mahomes homer, by the way, for anybody listening. I think he's the best player to ever live. Like, I think he's an absolute force. So I think the Chiefs are going to end up winning because obviously I'm a home run bias. But that, I'm curious how this Broncos defense is going to do against them. Like, they're going to – you got to imagine that they're going to get after them. They get after everybody. Nick Benito's a stud. Jonathan Cooper's a stud. Pastor Tan's a stud. Riley Moss is a stud. This defense is filled with just, like, absolute monsters. So all Bo Nix has to do is really just play – if he plays average ball, there's no reason why the Broncos can't go to the Super Bowl either.
Yeah, they need – I feel like the Broncos need to score 3 touchdowns and then play lockdown D the rest of the game.
Yeah, 3 touchdowns.
You get your 20 points, your 24, and you sit there and you do nothing.
Yeah, it's just like, like, yeah, I don't get it. I don't know why he's not, because he showed so many good flashes last year. Like, he really got hot at the end of last year. And Sean Payton's a really great offensive head coach. Like, he's kind of a wizard almost. He's like a mad scientist, like how he was with the Saints and Drew Brees. Yeah. Obviously, J.K. Dobbins going down. So congratulations, R.J. Harvey fantasy owners. People are excited about that. My roommate's got R.J. Harvey, and he thinks he's like the new Christian McCaffrey. So we'll see. So we'll see about that. The AFC's also been very, very interesting. The NFC could not be less interesting, to be honest with you. Did you watch Monday Night Football?
I saw that it was a really low scoring game.
Oh my gosh, it was unwatchable, dude. I turned off in the second half. Packers, Eagles, two teams looking to go to the Super Bowl. The Eagles being the defending champions, 10-7 in Lambeau, which is like a disaster.
That's mental. That's even worse than the Raiders Broncos game.
Yeah, and it was just like embarrassing to watch. Like, these teams were so darn conservative. Like, sure, it was like windy, whatever, but I don't know. Like, I hated like the Eagles running the clock out when they were like 20 yards out of field goal range and all their timeouts. Like, why are you running out the clock? They're like, go get points. It's a 0-0 game. But Jordan Love is terrible. Like, that's for sure. He's bad. He is definitely bad. Like, he just does so many bonehead things that, like, you can't do. Like, he's making like $55 million a year.
Yeah, either I think with Jordan Love, either you got to sit him down and be like, what are you doing? Please lock in, or just get rid of him and say the experiment's over and bring in a new guy.
Well, the issue with that in the NFL is you can't do that. You paid him. So you you can't get rid of him. Like, he is your quarterback, but I think the Packers honestly botched it because he's terrible. Like, he's just so bad. Like, he makes all these great plays because he's got a great arm. He's a pretty good athlete. But he makes so many plays where it's like, why would you do that? Like, he's some of the worst. He probably is like him. He does. He makes, like, you know, like who Will Levis is. Like, do you remember like the Will Levis, like all like the memes?
My Lord, yeah, Will Levis was hilarious to watch.
Yes, man. Like, hilarious. Cause like, why would you ever do that? And Jordan Love that. Like Jordan Love did that. They're in field goal range, I believe. They're in field goal range, third down the other night, and he just, like, fumbles it for no reason. Like, he just, like, tries to give it to Jacobs, fumbles it. Just, like, that's the game. They lost by 3 points. And it's like, oh, my God, man. Like, Jordy, like, you're too talented to act like that. But he was been doing that since his first year starting, and, like, that hasn't changed. Like, he's been around for a little while now. Like, it's his sixth year in the league. And, like, oh, dude, it drives me crazy. And then, like, their GM – their management group keeps just swinging, missing on receivers. Like, they're spending guys, second and third round picks on guys like Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, who have neither have turned out to be great guys for them. They just spent a first round pick on Matthew Golden, who the jury's obviously still out, but they're not giving him the ball.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes you wonder, all right, like, they have an issue at receiver and they're not giving him the ball. So it doesn't feel like he's been that great either.
Exactly.
And it's like, what the hell's going on? People are calling in Green Bay are calling for Matt LaFleur's head coach, which personally, as a Browns fan who is going to be probably looking for a head coach in the offseason, I would love for Matt LaFleur to become available, because I think he's a great head coach. And I do not think you can blame any of this on him, his quarterback being terrible and his GM missing on every offensive skill position possible. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a crapshoot all around, but what can you do?
Exactly. What can you do?
What can you do? All right. We're about to finish off now, Frankie. Any last thoughts?
Other than the Leafs got to get their stuff together if they want a chance at the playoffs this year, and Jay's got to sign Bo. Mm-hmm. Bill's got to do something to shake up their roster, and both Laurier hockey teams and basketball teams are doing pretty well for themselves. So I say just let it ride all around. Just let it ride.
Hopefully, yes. We're obviously very excited about the Laurier hockey and basketball teams. Both teams are also they're playing pretty good, as we spoke about a little bit earlier in the pod. Yeah, there's a lot to be excited for. There's a lot to be excited for. The Laurier men's football team, obviously, after a great season, they didn't get a chance to really do everything that they could, everything that they had the ability to. But there's always next year, right? You still have,
it's always true.
With Greg Marshall, the Western head coach, potentially retiring. You're going to have a guy like Michael Faulds here at Laurier for, I believe, almost the next decade. And he's, I guess, now would become the best coach in the OUA. He's a guy, yep. Everyone loves playing for him. Great recruiter. Just great, great mind, great offensive mind. And with a guy like that, you're always going to have a chance for years to come. So we'll end on that. Have a golden day, everybody. See you later.